Welcome to Permission to Heal. I am Marcy Brockman, and I am so glad you're here. In this podcast, we engage in meaningful, deeply human conversations using our voices to inspire connection, compassion, understanding, empathy, and wholehearted wellness. I want you to find the courage to transform yourself no matter what others tell you. Only you can give yourself permission to trust yourself, permission to take care of yourself, permission to follow your heart and desires, and build a life of love, home, and belonging. Through sharing our stories, we will help each other to heal and create the healthy, meaningful lives we richly deserve. We only need our own permission to begin. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Permission to Heal. I am Marcy Brockman, and I'm thrilled that you're here. Today, I have the wonderful and gorgeous Julie Bluen here with us, and you're just going to love this conversation. She's just fabulous. Julie is a certified professional coach, an international best-selling author, and a motivational speaker. She helps entrepreneurs, coaches, and authors who feel stuck in the areas of career, health, relationships, wealth, spirituality, and well-being to reach a new milestone, to set new goals, and to live the life of their dreams. What's better than that? Julie inspires and motivates her clients to step outside their comfort zone, to set attainable goals, and create rapid transformation. Julie helps her clients focus on personal growth and success by helping them increase their dose of self-love, self-confidence, self-worth, self-care, self-discipline, and overcome self-limiting beliefs. She enriches the lives of her clients by identifying blind spots, developing a clear vision, and by helping them take action to achieve their full potential, reach their goals, and ultimately live their best life. She co-wrote a book in John Spender's book series called A Journey of Riches, The Attitude of Gratitude, that has become a number one best-selling book within hours of release in both Canada and Australia in numerous categories, including spiritual self-help, alongside The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho, which I read at least once a year, and The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle. Wow. That's amazing. That's very cool. Welcome, Julie.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me on. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
I you know, when we were in BSA together, we're in a publicity class through Super Connector Media together. That's how we met. And when I heard Julie speak on our Q&A calls, and when I read the things that she posts in the site, I'm like, I absolutely knew, I zeroed in right away that Julie had to be one of the first guests on this podcast when we started it. She's just a light and motivational and inspirational, and I'm thrilled that you're here. It's a wonderful thing.
Thank you so much for reaching out. Actually, when they have us post different things in the group, I'm very humble in the sense that I don't really like talking about myself and talking about my achievements. So the fact that you picked up right away on the type of person that I am and just reached out to me, I'm so grateful for you.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, you know, I'm trying to build this so that it is each episode is beneficial and inspirational to the audience. I'm always mindful of their time or your time as you're listening to me. I'm speaking to you directly, listeners. Mindful of your time and want to bring you things that are and people who are going to change your life or your perspective, even if it's just a degree or two in a different direction. It can totally change the way you think about things. So that is why Julie is here. So I normally begin or try to begin. This is only episode 6, I believe. So maybe 7. I'm losing track. I ask 6 questions to sort of start the conversation going because I love the differences in the very cool ways that people answer these questions. So are you ready? We're going to start that.
Yes, go ahead. Okay.
All right. So what 5 words would you use to describe yourself?
I'm happy. I'm authentic. I like to inspire people. So I would say inspirational. I'm humble. And I vibrate in the energy of love. So I love all things, all people, and just love in general.
Wow. I never heard it put that way. The vibrations. What did you just say?
I vibrate in the energy of love.
Vibrate in the energy of love. I write that down.
I love people. I love things. I love animals. I vibrate in the energy of love.
I just love that phrase. I just felt like a big hug when you said that. That was great. Okay. Your favorite way to spend a day? This may change, but yeah.
It would be by the water, by a river, a lake, ocean, a beach, and with a good book or just a journal, a piece of paper and a pen, and sipping on green juice.
What is green juice?
Green juice is basically it's kale, cucumbers, just one apple to make it a little bit sweet, lemon, and I put in a little bit of ginger.
And you blend it yourself?
I just put that in the juicer, and it's very healthy. I drink that on an empty stomach, and and you feel amazing after you drink that. And actually, my skin looks a lot better now. I'm in my 40s. It looks a lot better now in my 40s than it did in my 20s.
Your skin is gorgeous. Juice. You guys at home, you're doing this as a podcast, can't see her, but her skin is flawless. Like you'd think she was airbrushed. Wow, I'm going to have to make me some of this green juice here.
Airbrushed. I've never heard that term before. It's funny. But Marcy, it's true. I do look at pictures of myself now in my 40s. I do feel better inside. And like, because that's the thing, that if you feel great on the inside and you nourish your body, the nutrients it needs, you're just going to look so amazing and healthy on the outside.
Okay. Kale, apple, ginger.
Yeah, so it's kale, cucumbers.
Cucumber.
Just one small apple just to make it a little bit sweet. Uh-huh. And then lemon. I put a full lemon in there. I make sure everything's organic. I'm just, I love to eat everything organic. Okay. And then a little bit of ginger. It's okay if you don't like ginger. Ginger is a little bit strong, but it's ginger is good for you.
Yeah, it's good for your digestion. Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm going to make this green juice. What's the liquid that you blend it all in? Water?
No, there's no liquid. You can add some coconut water if you'd like, but just juicing it, there is a lot of water in cucumber and juicing. Lemon as well. So you just use you just blend it in a juicer. You just put everything in there in a juicer, and then it makes a green juice.
Okay. Well, I'm going to have to try that. I think listeners, we should all try that because we all want to look like Julie. We all want to feel like Julie, which is really more important. Definitely. Okay. Number three, what's your favorite childhood memory?
Well, I have an identical twin.
So I love
playing
that.
Tricks on people. That was a lot of fun. It was great. It was amazing. We played tricks on family members, grandparents.
Pretend to be each other.
Yeah. So like for family members that we wouldn't see too often, we'd basically say, okay, do you know the difference between myself and my sister? Her name is Melanie. And then they're like, yeah, it's really easy. So then we would go in the washroom and just change clothes. And then we would trick them and say, who's who? And then they would get all confused. We did that in high school, even with all the teachers. Wow. I remember in high school, we asked all the teachers the last year in high school, I'm in Canada. So high school back in the day was 5 years because I went to university.
Right.
So the day before we switched classes, we asked all the teachers, we said, are you sure you know the difference between
Julie and Melanie?
Julie and Melanie. And they said, yeah, it's super easy. You don't even look one bit alike. It's easy. So we asked them all the teachers. And then the next day, they all confirmed that it was super simple and really easy, that we didn't look alike. And the next day, we switched classes. And then we obviously told the teachers.
Right.
But they were
afterwards.
All shocked.
Afterwards. Wow.
Yeah, they were all shocked and they didn't know. It was so much fun. We played so many tricks on people.
Wow.
It was amazing. It's great to take advantage of being an identical twin and just to make people laugh.
Absolutely. We had two sets of identical twins in my high school graduating class who, not all that often, but would occasionally switch. And like the one that was good at math would take the math tests and so on. And all the students knew, and we thought it was hysterical, and none of the teachers figured it out. So As far as I know, in the 25 years I've been teaching, that's never happened to me. But Lord knows, I don't think there's so many identical twins. I think there's more fraternal twins that I've seen lately. Anyway, that's irrelevant. That's another story. All right. So what's your favorite meal? Question number four.
Well, I love avocados. So that would be my favorite fruit. But favorite meal would have to be sushi. Sushi with vegetables. No meat in there, just vegetables.
Just vegetables. No fish?
Avocados. No fish. Just vegetables in there. And or even fruit. There are sushis that have fruit in them. So those are great.
But yum.
Yeah, I love sushi and I love avocados. So Mackey's, you know, with avocados in there or just, yeah, they're so healthy.
That's delicious. Yeah, we had sushi last night with avocado and mango and oh my gosh, so good. But I have fish in there, a little tuna, a little salmon. Fabulous. Okay. Number five, what one piece of advice would you like to give to your younger self?
Wow. There's a lot of advice I can give my younger self. But the one piece of advice I would say would be don't sweat the small stuff. And that's a great book. Actually, it's a book from Dr. Richard Carlson. I actually received it back when it came out. I believe it was 1997. And I've learned so much from that book. And I was quite young when I received that book. And it's just, don't sweat the small stuff. It's all small stuff. And just let it go. There's no sense in holding on to something that you have no control over. It's just basically,
absolutely.
If something happens in your life and you have no control over that, you just have to let it go. And you take a look at solutions or you take a look at how to overcome it. But really, whatever happened is irrelevant. That's in the past. You have to recenter yourself in the present moment and just look at solutions to stay centered and focus on the present moment. It's really important.
Absolutely. Process what happened, get what you can out of it, learn what you can out of it, and then let it go and move forward. That's excellent.
Exactly.
I think that's, we talked about this before we started recording, but I think that that the pandemic, the COVID-19 pandemic has really fine-tuned that for so many people. Because without our health, we really have nothing else. And so I think we've come to realize that that is of supreme importance. And then everything else really is the small stuff. Regardless of how big and important those things are, beyond your health, they're really, and your family's health and that of your loved ones, it's all small stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, number six, what is the one thing you would most like to change about the world?
For people to be more loving towards themselves and towards other people as well. Like I said a little while ago, I vibrate in the energy of love. For people to not be in that same loving environment, it's a little bit more difficult for me, but I would love to see everyone just helping each other out, just loving themselves, you know, having the self-confidence and loving everything about yourself and helping each other out and just being, having that mindset. It's so important. I would, and I do feel that society is moving towards that more and more as well. And that's why this podcast, when you asked me to be on this podcast, I was so grateful because Permission to Heal, it's exactly what I tell people to do is you have to love yourself. You have to give yourself permission to heal.
Yeah.
And that's where a lot of people struggle. So that's why I think that your podcast is so immensely important.
Thank you so much. The idea, the concept of giving oneself permission to do something has been therapeutically very close to my heart for quite a few years. I had grown up for most of my life being like a chronic people pleaser based on my own childhood trauma. And my mom was a bipolar, narcissistic drug addict, basically opiate drug addict. So she was loving in some respects, but very unpredictable and very changeable and all sorts of things that set me up for not feeling like I was worthy of love and belonging and connection and that I was always trying to be the perfect person and always trying to please other people to feel like I was worthy. And so as I was reaching my early 40s, I realized that this was not a healthy way to live, and it wasn't what I wanted to be teaching my children. And I was in therapy, and I just sort of doubled down in that and was doing a lot of reading and a little research, because that's how I figure things out. And I came up with the idea that I had to give myself permission to focus on myself and to do the things that I had previously deemed as selfish, which aren't. You know, we have to fill our own cups up before we can fill up anybody else's cup. And I even got a tattoo on my arm. No one will see it but you. This little
swirly
thing. That's I did some research. It's a, not that I'm Celtic at all, but it's a Celtic symbol of happiness. But I just loved the swirliness of it. And I put it on the inside of my left wrist just to remind myself every single day to give myself permission to heal, to love myself, permission to set my own, to put my own needs at the forefront alongside of everything else that I felt that I had to do and not put myself on the back burner. So it became the title of my book, Permission to Land, which all sorts of fits into the same theme.
And to have your to have it on your left wrist, you're the only, it looks beautiful, by the way, even if no one knows what it means, it's absolutely beautiful. But for you, it's a constant reminder of giving yourself that permission, right?
Absolutely.
And, you know, when you're talking about the people pleaser, I was the same way too. Growing up, I was a people pleaser. I could not say no. Actually, yeah. I was a high achiever, wanted to, you know, I won a lot of awards in school. I wanted to have, you know, the best marks and the best grades in school. I was the same way. I was a people pleaser until I realized that it wasn't good for my own health.
Right.
Because I wasn't putting myself first when you should be placing yourself first, not everyone else's needs first. Right. I was the same way. And I learned to say no. Actually, I was older. I was quite older. And it was when I was on Lisa Gibbons' book launch team. She launched a book called Take Two.
Okay.
And she's the one that taught us actually in the book. And she taught us, the people on her book launch team, to actually learn to say no. And
you have to. You run out of time.
Exactly.
You run out of energy.
And I gave myself permission to say no. Before that, I felt like I couldn't say no. I had to justify and provide a reason. And now in my coaching, it's the same thing. No is a complete sentence.
Absolutely.
Just say no. You don't need
a reason.
Need a reason. Just say no. And so I know where you're coming from when you're saying that you were a people pleaser. Because I was the same way. There's a lot of people that are like that.
Yeah, a lot of people. We, especially as women, I think society sort of grooms us, sort of brainwashes us, if you will, to think that our only value is through service to others. Our only value as women is to be mothers, is to be caretakers, to be the person who everyone goes to for help and to boost everyone else up. And I think for a very long time, women were sort of told to be small and quiet and not cause trouble and not express their emotions and to just be there and for their families and society. And I'm glad that has changed and is changing and is getting better for all of us. Because I think as women uplift themselves, whole families and whole communities get uplifted as well.
Absolutely. And it takes people to like you, for example, with your book and with your podcast, to let women know that it is possible. And what I love about you, Marcy, is that you're letting your voice be heard. And that's so important. You're being highly visible and you're growing every day and you're just doing these amazing things in the world. And I just love that about yourself because
thank you.
You're always growing. The person, you know, if someone, knew you, for example, a year ago, they would see all the growth that you've done.
Oh, absolutely.
And you keep on working and just growing and getting your message out there. It's amazing.
It's important. I think that there's too many stigmas, too many judgments, or too many people feel like they're going to be judged if they show their vulnerability and they let other people in to what's really going on in their heart. And it actually is the opposite. You know, sure, there are always going to be judgmental people, but they're irrelevant to me. You know, if you're going to look down on your nose at somebody else, you know, get in the ring with us, and then you can make, you're entitled to an opinion, but don't stand there on the outside and have an opinion.
But people are always going to judge you no matter what. They're always going to judge you. It's just letting it go and just being yourself. And I love the fact that you're letting your voice be heard, and your message is so important.
Thank you so much.
I love it. And you're giving people permission to step outside their comfort zone and follow in your footsteps as well. You're so inspirational. And that's why I'm so happy to be on this podcast, because it seems like you've been doing hundreds of episodes. I was listening to your first episode with Sherry, and Sherry Strong. It didn't feel like your first episode. It felt like you had done hundreds of those.
That's very nice to hear. Very nice to hear. I'm very proud of what I'm doing here. You know, I'm a one woman show. I don't have any tech help. I have no budget whatsoever. And it's just me and a mic and my Mac and a dream, you know, this need to reach out. When I was writing my book, I knew that I wanted to be able to take the messages of healing and self-reliance and vulnerability and open-heartedness. And I wanted to bring these things out to women mostly, but to men too, and to the teenagers that I teach. I'm a high school English teacher. And I think that if these messages, these uplifting ideas were taught and imparted to people when they were younger, they'd live much longer, healthier, happier lives than I did. And so I kind of feel like if I had to suffer, if you want to say it that way, and go through all the things that I've gone through, that at least I should be able to share the lessons that I learned along the way and shorten the amount of time other people have to feel the way I felt. So that's my mission here. It's not very concise, but that's my mission here. Okay, so let's go back to the book that you co-wrote with John Spender, The Attitude of Gratitude, The Journey of Riches, Attitude of Gratitude. Will you tell us a little bit about your book?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's, we're 12 co-authors. It's all different topics, and it just talks about the attitude of gratitude. We have Monique. She talks about a surfing accident that she had, and then how she healed it with the attitude of gratitude. And there's Simone, where she talks about leaving an abusive relationship and why gratitude is important. And there's so many different topics in that book. There's also Tina Louise. She talks about cancer, her cancer journey. In the book. And then it's so very different. So you have 12 different perspectives in the book. And I talk about that I lost my brother when I was only 16 years old. And my mother passed away.
He was older, wasn't he?
My brother was 3 years older than me. And he passed away. I was only 16 years old. He was 19. And my mother passed away in 2000. I was only 22 years old.
Wow.
And that was 6 years later. And I explain how the coping mechanisms how I healed it with the attitude of gratitude. So I explained 5 coping mechanisms in the book. I talk about positive mindset. I talk about a gratitude journal, affirmations, gratitude jar, and I also explained gratitude letter as well. But it's a great book. It's amazing. So we've made it to number one in Canada within a few hours in Australia, number one in the United States, number one in Japan, and number two in France as well. So it was completely amazing. I was very proud.
That's huge. And how many thousands, millions of people you guys have all helped, you know, and the ripple effect of that, you help one person and then they help someone else. So it's even larger. I read the portion of the book that you wrote last night. I didn't realize that I hadn't read it yet. Anyway, so there were a lot of things in there that were very interesting to me that you were, you know, as somebody who's researched this and lived this, the idea of transforming grief, of healing after loss and coping with the grief. And there were some of these things that I intuitively had been doing on my own. And that definitely helped me after my mother died 7 years ago. And as I was reading it, I was like checking it off, like, yay me, I was doing that. That's awesome. You know, I've been keeping journals since 1983. So, you know, the idea of writing and writing expressively and putting your heart out on the page, I know the absolute mind-body benefits of that. I talk about that a lot. And it's actually the foundation of my memoir, because I was able to go back to 35 years worth of journals and use that as, you know, first line documents for the history of my life, you know. So it wasn't, you weren't taking my 52-year-old memory and trying to remember what happened when I was 15. I had my 15-year-old voice telling me what happened. So yeah, it's just an amazing thing being able to write and get all of that out there.
But I think, like you said, you knew by using your intuition how to heal yourself. I think we all do. I think the great thing about this book is that it is a reminder for people, because when you're going through a lot of pain, when you're hurting, when you're going through sickness, you know, and in the book, it talks about the cancer journey where, you know, people receive the big C diagnosis,
right,
and then you feel like it's a death sentence, and it's not, right? And it's just with me is that I talk about, you know, when you go see a therapist, when you're trying to process and grieve, they talk about five different things. They talk about the emotions of denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. Well, I was 16 years old. I didn't know any of those things.
Sure.
It was so complicated for me that it's just, I used my intuition to heal myself. And I felt like it was such an important message that people needed to hear that. And like you said, everyone knows how to do it and heal themselves. Like you've done it, you've used it, but just to have, you know, a book by your side to just remind you of the things you already know when you're going through a big obstacle in your life, it can really help.
Yeah. I mean, especially when you're talking about affirmations, like, you know, without a guide, somebody would say, oh, you know, you can use affirmations to help yourself. And suddenly my mind goes blank and I can't think of a thing, you know, but having a book by your side, having somebody's tried and true experience to help motivate you and guide you through it, suddenly you're like, oh yeah, that's what an affirmation is. And I can use this. And, you know, your words can help trigger the healing messages that someone else might already have in their heart that they can't quite access. And I think that it serves as a catalyst to access the things that are buried deep inside of us that we might not be able to uncover on our own, which is why I think therapy, which is why I think sharing stories like this with each other is so monumentally important, because the healing power of sharing our experience cannot be underestimated.
Yeah, absolutely. And then even in the book, I talk about the affirmations and I talk about how to, you know, the gratitude journal, and I give a lot of examples as well. You know, I am stronger than the person I was yesterday.
Right.
So it doesn't mean that it's only to heal, you know, grief. It could be, you know, something happened at work.
Sure.
And you're trying to shake it off and you don't know how to do, like, to shake it off and do that. So you can write, or you can say, I am stronger than the person I was yesterday. There's a lot of things like, I do not let outside circumstances I cannot control disrupt my inner peace. That was very relevant during the pandemic.
Absolutely.
Right? Because we had no control of what was happening on the outside. The only thing that we could control was what was happening right here inside, our inner peace, right?
Your response to it. Yeah. Yeah.
So,
I'm teaching full time in the middle of a pandemic and the kids are in masks and I'm in masks. And some of the kids, you know, we split each grade level into different cohorts so that some go on some days and some go on other days. And I can see the trauma in their eyes and how exhausted they are from this relentless stress, you know, like there is a light at the end of the tunnel. I mean, there are companies who are working on vaccines, and we've been reading a lot about that in the news. So, you know, I think it's kind of helping because we can see that at some point in a few months, hopefully, there'll be the beginning of the end of this. But right now, in the middle of it, in the thick of it, I'm very concerned about their mental health. Much more concerned about their mental health than their academic health, because they'll all be fine. We can catch them up. They can catch themselves up. It's really, that's not long lasting. The emotional, mental damage that this struggle is having on these young people. And I only see teenagers, but this is affecting little ones, little 5-year-olds in elementary school and kindergarten. And we're going to have some work to do on the other end of this to help repair.
Well, what I see on my level is that little kids are being told, no, you can't hug someone. You can't love someone. You have to stay 6 feet away. And then they're wearing masks where they feel that, well, I can't speak.
Right.
I can't talk. Right. So they're being told that they're not able to do certain things. So little kids and even teenagers feel not loved. Right. They feel like they can't talk. They're not worthy. That potentially can develop a lot of negative image or the self-belief, self-doubt. Even it can shatter their whole self-confidence. So it's very important as parents or as teachers to explain that, you know, it's the pandemic. And once the pandemic is over, then I mean, there's going to be a lot of healing that will need to take place for these people and for everyone. I'm talking about kids in school, but even older people as well. You know, they feel like, well, it's the same way. They don't want to approach anyone because potentially, you know, it could make them sick or and they're living in fear and not in, like I said, the energy of love.
Hugging it's hard someone to sustain
is so healing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to sustain your energy and your positivity when every single day is that same way, when there are so many things that you can't control. Which is why I love the strategies that you have in this book, because they really are things that anybody can do at any time. They don't cost any money. They don't take that much time. It's just the mindset of committing oneself to the practice of doing it. You know, and if you want to start a gratitude journal and you skip a day, don't berate yourself over it. Just write again the next day. It's not a big deal. A few years ago, my husband and I started a gratitude jar. And I went to the store and I bought this gigantic mason jar and these little pads of paper. And we keep them on a dresser in our bedroom. Right. And we don't do it as often as we should have. Like I, in my mind, was thinking about like when something significantly good happens, that we put something in the jar, but I wasn't doing the daily things. And your book reminded me that I should be doing the daily things because there are things that happen every day that I'm grateful for. Even just getting through the day lately has been a feat, has been something that I should applaud myself for doing, you know? I taught a whole day. I came home. I attended to my family. I attended to my own needs. I recorded a podcast. I, you know, whatever it is that I've been doing. And I think it's important for us to do. So what we do is we fill up the jar with all these little pieces of paper. And then on New Year's Eve night, we empty the jar and spread all the little papers out on our bed.
Oh,
and
wow.
There and together. And we read them all out loud to each other. And we relive the whole year of this amazing love and pride and happiness and, you know, things that we are doing and our kids are doing and our grandkids are doing. And it's just, I love it. I love our little habit of doing that. This is January, we'll be only married 4 years. So this will be the fourth year that we're doing it. And I think everybody should go out and get a jar and start. I think it's great.
And the thing is that sometimes you'll have an off day, right? Sometimes you'll have a day where you get up and you're feeling a little bit off. You're still tired, but you have obligations. So you have to get going with your day. But if you walk past that gratitude jar and you see the jar half filled or almost full with all these little papers,
yeah,
it just kind of instills that confidence and that happiness saying, wow, okay, so I'm having an off day today, but I am grateful. There's a lot of things in my life to be grateful for. It's
absolutely
the same thing with the gratitude journal. Is sometimes it's going to be hard and you're going to have days that you're not very motivated or you feel like you don't have anything to be grateful for, especially if you receive bad news, you know, with right. your health, with your relationships, with your family. And during the pandemic, there are people that lost their jobs or, you know, that had their business shut down for a few months.
And have had loved ones die. Yeah, it's been tough.
It was difficult where, you know, and if you don't feel motivated or you have nothing to be grateful for, what you can do is you can just read the previous entries in your book, in your journal, and then it's going to create a momentum of right. positivity. Even if you don't have anything to add that day, that's fine. Just reread it. At least you'll start the day with a positive mindset. You'll be happy.
I mean, in some days you just have to settle for the fact that you're above ground and you're breathing and that you're able to think about it and move forward. I mean, that in itself is something to be grateful for. You know,
it's
very, very basic, but I'm able to fill my lungs with air and I'm able to take a deep breath. That's good. That's the place to begin. You know, sometimes it's just as simple as that because that's the way it is.
And you with being a teacher this year, it must not be easy. When I had the parent teacher meeting last week for my son on Thursday, I congratulated all the teachers and I said, you know, I understand it must not be easy. My son's 14 and a half years old. All the parent teacher meetings were conducted through
teleconference.
Video.
Yeah,
exactly. And then, but it's not easy. And so last year in school during the pandemic, they made everyone pass. They used the previous marks.
Right. We did the same thing.
And and everyone passed. So this year, 14-year-olds, they're always with the same 30 kids in the class. They don't have a locker. They cannot mingle with other kids. It's like putting, I don't know if you've ever watched Big Brother, but it's putting a Big Brother, like 30 kids, teenagers with teenage hormones in a class, like a Big Brother class.
Yeah.
And I mean, it must be difficult on teachers because they cannot speak to their friends, talk to their friends. They can't mingle with them. They have to always stay in that small group.
Yeah.
So I feel you.
Thank you. Yeah, it's difficult. I mean, I'm not the sage on the stage kind of teacher, you know, where I'm just lecturing. I teach English. So it's conversation. We're reading books, we're reading short stories, we're reading poetry. Let's talk about it. What does all of this mean? What are the author feeling? You know, like we're connecting it to our own experience and the human experience in general. And 90% of what we do is conversation. And like you said, with the masks on, the kids feel like they can't speak. And so it's absolute silence in the classroom. They're not talking to each other. They're not talking to me. I call on them directly and there's no response. It's just scary. And yet, you know, the school district issued each of them identical Chromebook computers in identical cases. And they're all sitting in rows very far apart because it's only half of the cohort. So there's only like 10 or 12 kids in the class at a maximum. And so they're all sitting in these rows very far apart. They're all wearing masks. For some reason, most of them wear black ones. I don't know why. And they're sitting at these computers. And so I'm behind my desk because we're none of us are allowed anywhere near each other. So I'm not walking around anymore like I used to. And I'm looking and they're all just silently typing away in identical little. And it's very Orwellian. It's very Big Brother. It's very scary, like 1984, holy crap, George Orwell's rolling over in his grave right now. You know, it's just the little click, click, click sound of their computer keyboards. And there's nothing.
There's nothing. There's silence because the mask is somewhat preventing them from speaking. It's not, but that's the message maybe that's
absolutely psychologically,
in their brain, right? Psychologically is I have a mask on. You know, I'm not able to speak. I don't know, maybe psychologically, that's what it's doing to these kids.
Absolutely. And it was about a month ago, I walked into my classroom and the 11th graders were actually talking to each other.
Wow.
For the first time, and this was like the end of November, and we've been in school since early September. So for 2.5 months, there was not a sound. There wasn't even social conversation. Then all of a sudden, they were talking, and I burst into tears. I was so thrilled that they were talking to each other that I didn't even care. Like normally a teacher would come in and shush the conversation so the class can start. I was not shushing a thing. And once they sort of realized I was waiting for them, which they did on their own, they were quiet and we went forward. But I was thrilled that they were talking.
Wow.
And I didn't realize the magnitude that and the effect of their silence on me even. I mean, it's been crazy. I created an assignment for my 12th graders and I said, okay, today we're closing our computers, put them away. Of course, there were some people in a teleconference on a Google Meet. So those kids still had to have their computers out, but I gave out crayons to everyone, little packs of crayons, because we can't share materials. And I said, I want you to think of all the things that make you happy. And I want you to draw your initials on a piece of paper, and then I want you to embellish them with all of the things that make you smile and all the things that make your heart feel huge and big and all encompassing.
Wow.
And that's what we focused on. And they were chatting with each other very quietly. Okay, so what are you drawing? Oh, I like that. What are you drawing? And just a piece of paper and 8 little crayons in a zippy bag. And these kids were happy again. I transformed them for a few minutes back into kids. It was fabulous. I wish we could do that every day, but you know, can't really. but I think it helped remind us all that we don't really need these computers. I mean, we do now, but you know, that the humanity is still here.
And that's why it's important to remind them.
Yeah.
That although we do have restrictions at this current time, this is not permanent. We're
right.
Still human. We still need human contact, human touch, a hug. All those things. Love is so important.
Absolutely.
You know, for your voice to be heard, to speak, to talk about your feelings, to talk about what you love to do, to talk about anything. It's so important. I think it's really important to discuss it with our kids.
Absolutely.
And our loved ones, not only the kids, the loved ones as well, everyone.
Yeah, we have to talk about it the same way we talk about other things. I mean, it's because we're all going through the same exact emotions at different times, maybe, but we're all going through the same thing. I mean, this is a global pandemic. So I would hazard to say that people in India and people in Africa and people in Tibet are feeling the same exact restrictions and the same emotionality about it that we are. And we have to just keep talking. That's the connection. That's where empathy starts. That's where the love between us starts and heals. That's it, you know?
Exactly.
That's everything. Yeah. I took out some quotes from the chapter that I thought I just loved. Can I read you to you for
sure.
A second?
Yeah,
okay. You wrote, love is infinite and eternal. And if we simply recall and cherish our happy memories together, we can connect with them again. When you bring your awareness back to the present moment and use the coping tips discussed in this chapter, you are giving yourself permission to move forward from grief and start the healing process. To me, this spoke to me huge. When my mom died, our relationship was very tumultuous and we hadn't been in any contact whatsoever in over a year and a half. And I was very angry and very hurt. And no one in her life was willing to eulogize her. And it fell upon me as the only daughter, the only child to do so. And I was so vehemently angry and hurt and disappointed and already grief-stricken before she died. And I did this by this recall and cherishing of the memories and connecting with them by going through photographs. I happened to be the keeper of all of the family photographs. So I had, she was 69. So I had all of the photographs going back to the 1940s on forward. And I spent like a whole day and a half just looking at photographs and crying and remembering things. And I started to see my mother as not this different, unhealthy person that she wound up, but as the cherished, nurtured, cherished baby that she had been as a child, and the sweet little cherubic cheeks that she had when she was a little girl, and pictures of her growing up as a teenager, and pictures of her with me when I was little, and happy memories and holidays and so on. And I started to remember all of the love and all of the generous and the kind and the loving that she used to be. And it really helped in more ways than I could ever communicate verbally how to get from that angry loss to compassion and love.
Mm. And now the holidays are coming up very soon, and there's so many people that feel the grief yeah. that is coming back, especially when they lost and when a loved one. I mean, my mom passed away in 2000, mm-hmm. and you know, it's a long time ago, but during the Christmas holidays, it's the same thing. Yeah. I miss my mom. You know, I wish that she was here, that I could hug her and, you know, give her a kiss and just tell her that I love her. And you can still do that. It's just, she's not physically here. Right. She's always going to be there with us, but it's just the holidays is such a difficult time for a lot of people. But when you cherish the fun times and the memories of your loved ones, it just helps in going through, you know, the holidays successfully. Yeah. And you know, because it can be tough, especially people that are, you know, widowed or, you know, there's so many people grieving this year. So
yeah, absolutely.
It's a lot easier.
And I think not just remembering those good times for themselves, but sharing those good memories with other loved ones, you know, like talking with your kids, talking with your other family members, with your significant other, whoever, talking about, you know, remember when mom did this, or remember when dad did that, and sharing the joy and the love of those memories not only keeps that person who is gone alive in our hearts, but helps us still feel the cocoon and the safety and the warmth of that love. And I think too many people feel like if they mention the loved one, it's going to be too hurtful for others, or that the pain or of the grief is going to be too overwhelming, and that they don't talk about them. And I think the not talking about them is the more destructive part. Do you agree?
Exactly. Giving us permission to heal at our own pace is so important. I mean, sometimes I tell people that I'll even post it on Facebook. Every year I post it that I'm grieving my mom during the Christmas holidays, yeah. Especially on Christmas Day. And there's a song from Corey Hart that I listened to. He released it last year. And it just reminds me how beautiful she is and how the light is just shining. Her light is still shining through me. And it's a beautiful song. It came out last year. It's from Corey Hart. I don't remember the title. I think it's called maybe on Christmas Day or something like that. It's about Christmas. And it just, some of the lyrics say, the beautiful light is still shining through me. And my mom was just a beautiful soul. And I'm not afraid to let people know that it's okay to yeah. still be healing. It's okay to miss that person, even after a long time. It doesn't matter. We need to verbalize it. We need to feel it.
Yeah.
And if you don't feel like being around people, you know, or big parties or during the Christmas holidays, well, there's going to be a lot of restrictions this year.
Yeah. You're in a good place this year because there are no parties this year.
But it's the same thing, is you can say no. You don't have to feel obligated to do different things if you don't feel up to it, or
you can go late, or you can leave early, you know. Take your own transportation and decide how long you want to participate.
Exactly. but it's always giving yourself permission.
Absolutely. And I always say grief isn't linear, you know. You're not going to get incrementally better every single day and then you don't feel it anymore. You know, it's cyclical and idiosyncratic, and you're going to oscillate between feeling good and feeling bad, sometimes minute by minute or hour by hour. You know, like it's been 7 years since my mother died, and there are certain times of the year, like you said, there are certain times of year that are harder than others, certain days that are harder than others. I hear a song and suddenly I start to cry, or something happens that's wonderful with my kids and whom I'm so proud of. And I just wish that my mother was here to share in that pride, you know, the nachas of that, as we Jewish people call. And I just have to hope that somewhere, wherever she is, that she's looking down on us and is happy and proud and filled with the love and is just unencumbered by her physical lack of health when she was here. So I talk about that a lot with, especially with kids, because I know that the stories that they tell me through their writing and is sometimes overwhelmingly sad that they're so young and have experienced such tragedy and such drama. And I think that they need to feel safe expressing it, because that's the first step toward healing. It's amazing. Well, this has been fabulous. We could talk for hours. I'm so thrilled that you're here. And we really have to just keep talking about all of these very important, close to the heart feelings and conversations. So if you do want to like leave our listeners with a bit of your special Julie wisdom?
Well, actually, if you give me permission, I don't know, I didn't discuss this with you prior, but I could give your listeners a freebie.
Absolutely. Go ahead. Okay. The mic is yours, darling.
Okay. But if I mention it at the end, that means they have to listen to the whole podcast. So it's a win-win situation, right?
Sure.
Actually, if they reach out to me by email, I can give them a freebie. It's basically, it's to help them start 2021 on the right foot. It would be, it's a journal. It's it includes a vision board. It includes like a daily journal with gratitude, with affirmations, and it's really amazing. I mean,
wow. I want this.
So all they can do is they can just send me an email at, they would have to, in the subject line, they would have to put permission to heal. So okay. Freebie permission to heal in the subject line so that I know. And then they can send me an email at Julie. Julie, my last name, Blouin, Blouin.
I'll put all this in the show notes. I'm writing it down too. So I'm putting it all in the show notes so they can see it there too.
And then, I'll just send them the freebie. It's just, it's a daily journal. It's really amazing. Usually I give that to my clients, but I think this can really help someone actually in need, and it's just perfect for your audience. I want to give them that.
That's wonderful. I think that's excellent. Okay. So I will put all of that in the show notes and how they can get in touch with you and your email and your social information. And this has been a pleasure, Julie. Thank you so very much for being here.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me. And I love your podcast.
Thank you so much.
I love it. I am excited to see who else you're going to bring on. You're just so amazing.
Well, we've got a lot of people from BSA who I'm interested in pulling into this. And I do a lot of writing for Elephant Journal, which is an online magazine, journal, whatever, all about health and wellness and relationships and love and all of this fabulous stuff. And so I'm pulling writers from there that I absolutely love. And, I have grown this community over the last like decade of all of these wonderful, open-hearted, phenomenal people. I'm going to amplify their stories and bring them to our audience. And it's my mission and my privilege to be able to do this. I feel like this is the culmination of all these things that I have been working towards. And I, until a month ago, didn't even know this is what I was going to do. Actually, that was one question, if you don't mind me asking. How did you, I'm so interested in career journeys. How did you find yourself in this position right now?
Like as a life coach?
Yeah. How did you decide that this is what you wanted to do? I mean, it's a little...
I've been coaching everyone. Well, I've been coaching so many people my whole life. When I was 6 years old, I thought I wanted to be a school teacher. Okay. And I went to university and I ended up receiving my bachelor's of social sciences. And then I applied for teacher's college, which I got in, but then I started working. And then I said, oh, okay, so I'll go next year. I applied again, got in again. And then I don't know. I just, I've been wanting to be a teacher. When I was 6 years old, I used to line up all the dolls in the basement and
that's so cute.
I used to teach them a classroom about life. And I there used to go. Teach them anything and everything about life. And I've been doing this my whole life, just being a life coach, but I didn't know what it was.
You didn't know it was a thing.
I didn't know it was a thing until back in 2013, I ended up, doing a little bit of research and then finding out about what a certified professional coach is and what they do. And that's when I decided to take the course and just research it. And, and I've never looked back.
That's awesome.
I love it. I love helping people. And when you help people and you see them, how successful they are today, mm-hmm. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Some have written so many meaningful books. Some people are so wealthy and they're so humble and they're so amazing and they know who they are. And I'm just so impressed with everyone that I've helped along the way. It's amazing when you can really help people pivot their lives.
Yeah.
It makes me feel good. It feels like I'm helping society. I mean, it feels like I'm helping people just become the best version of themselves. That was amazing.
What's better than that, really?
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Brings meaning to you, brings meaning to them. Excellent. Excellent. Well, this has been fabulous, Julie. I'm so glad that we had this conversation. I'm so glad that you were here. Thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me.
You're very welcome. This is the last episode of 2020 and the end of the first month of Permission to Heal, and I would like to say a little something to commemorate both. 2020 has been a very scary, anxious, out-of-joint year. Back in March, just as the world was reeling from the beginning of the coronavirus pandemic, I was very sick with what was likely COVID. I had every single symptom and 104 fever, but the ER didn't have COVID tests yet, so there was no way to know for sure. As you all know, I'm a public high school English teacher on Long Island, New York, and the East Coast was ravaged by ridiculously high numbers of cases of COVID that were overwhelming the hospitals. Everything and everyone stopped. Everything closed. And as educators, we were scrambling to get our students online in record time and resume teaching virtually, while also tending to their emotional and psychological needs as best as possible, and also tending to our own and our own families. 2020 was a miserable year for so many. I never felt more physically isolated and yet emotionally connected to friends and family thanks to FaceTime and Zoom. We faced heartbreak together at the deaths of some of our most loved and treasured family members and had to mourn together from a distance. I spent amazing amounts of time with my loving and kind husband, Michael, and our immediate family, and we bonded more closely through our shared time at home. We also watched the world erupt over social and racial injustice, economic hardship and inequity, political strife and division. We watched a beacon of grassroots organizations calling out to end the long overdue injustice and inequity. For this tearing off of the old bandages, 2020 has shed light that will hopefully continue to fix, repair, and heal that which has been long overdue. We were anxious about our own health and safety, as well as all the frontline workers keeping our grocery stores working, the truck drivers keeping stores stocked, police officers, fire departments, and myriad of other dedicated workers doing their best to keep these integral services functioning. I want to especially thank all the doctors, nurses, EMTs, and all other medical personnel who risked and are continuing to risk their lives every single day to care for the sick and injured and dying. Our gratitude at their sacrifices and services will never end. To deal with my own increasing anxiety over things I cannot control, I started to take daily doses of Lexapro, which helped immeasurably keep my stomach out of my throat and helped me stop crying over everything. I dedicated myself to weekly phone therapy sessions and creativity through journal writing, painting, and working on my books. In the midst of all of this, my memoir, Permission to Land, Searching for Love, Home, and Belonging, and the companion journal, Personal Transformation Through Writing, were in their final edits and revision stages. I was working with my editor, Craig Lancaster, on the final revisions of my book, and with my book cover designer, Debbie O'Byrne, on the covers of both books. I planned my book launch for July 1st via Zoom and appeared as a guest on many podcasts talking about the healing power of storytelling and expressive writing. During the summer, I recorded the audio narration of my audiobook during the long middle night recording sessions in my crudely erected home recording studio as the whole quiet world around me slept. The fall brought with it new stress and anxiety of increased social distancing rules as schools all over the country prepared to go back to school despite increasing cases of COVID. Our collective anxiety continued to sustain itself at a very high level. And then we had the election cycle and the shared political anxiety and strife that that caused. We will persevere together. And then in mid-November, while listening to a remote guest speaker, Chuck Garcia, give a talk about the art of the podcast to my senior English classes via Google Meet, I had a huge epiphany and Permission to Heal was born in a flash of an explosion in my brain. I instantly knew the format and the theme of my new podcast and felt that after months and months of creatively meandering around aimlessly, trying to find my voice to share stories and messages of hope and healing, I had finally figured out how. Within 2 weeks, I had launched Permission to Heal while riding high on the joy of it and not overthinking. I never wait until I'm, quote, ready. I just jump in with both feet and begin. I'm a one-woman operation here at PTH with no budget, but a lot of love and joy and empathy. November 28th, 2020, I launched Permission to Heal, and now we are here, December 30th, 2020, on episode 7. I am booked with enough conversations with amazing and interesting people to get us well through March of 2021 with extraordinary ideas and inspiration for healing. Permission to Heal has been downloaded and listened to at least 260 times to outstanding and stellar reviews, and I'm thrilled beyond measure with this whole process and my amazing, fabulous listeners. You, right there, you listening to this right now, thank you, and I love you. Thank you for going on this journey with me as we all continue to learn how to give ourselves permission to love, permission to share, permission to go for our dreams, permission to take care of ourselves and our loved ones, and permission to heal. Happy New Year. May 2021 bring you everything you dream for yourselves and your loved ones. Thank you for joining me for this episode of Permission to Heal. I hope you found it moving and inspirational. Please remember, you don't need anyone else's permission to trust and follow your heart. You have the power within you. Subscribe to Permission to Heal so you don't miss any new episodes, and please share this with your friends.